supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. As new details emerge regarding the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election, Americans will surely bring their opinions to the office water cooler next week. For now, sexual harassment claims dominated the news, and the Gallup poll went to Americans for their thoughts. Let's tap into public attitudes around the problem with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, does Gallup have a sense of the percentage of women who claim they've been targeted in this way?
We do. We recently asked women across the country if they have personally been the victims of sexual harassment, and over 4 out of 10 said that indeed they had. Now, this was over their lifetime, so we don't know how recently this was. And for an older woman, that could be a number of years involved, of course, as they think back over it, but that's a very significant number. We also know that 7 in 10 women say that harassment is a major problem in the U.S., and we do have a trend on that. When we had asked that question previously a decade or two ago, that was much lower. So we have rising concern on the part of women, and as I mentioned, a not insignificant percentage who say that sexual harassment has been an issue for them personally in their lifetime.
Frank, sexual harassment is an umbrella term when one focuses more specifically on sexual assault. What does the data show?
Much lower numbers involved there. We actually include sexual assault as one of a number of crimes that we ask about in our October crime survey. We say, have you over the last 12 months, mind you, not in your lifetime, but over the last 12 months, experienced any of these crimes? And sexual assault is one of those. And that's extremely low. Among women, it's about 1% or less who say over the last 12 months they have experienced sexual assault. We do know, however, that 30% of women say that they worry, at least some, about sexual assault. So although the numbers are very low, we do find that there is concern on the part of women about sexual assault, as well as we've talked about, sexual harassment.
Frank, staying in the workplace, I understand Gallup has new numbers about employee preference for the gender of their superior.
That's right. This is a question that we first started asking back in the 50s. And at that point, we found that a significant percent of Americans said that if they were taking a new job and had a choice of a boss, they would prefer a man. And it was 57% back in the Eisenhower era who said they would prefer a man. Only 8% said a woman boss. The rest said it didn't make a difference. And we asked it again in the 70s, and that was up to about 60% who said they preferred a man. And then things changed. Starting in about 2000 and so, we had an increase in the percent who said it wouldn't make a difference, although a man boss still beat out a female boss every time we ask it, up until this very last poll where we just asked it recently, and now we have no preference. 44% of Americans say that if they were taking a job, it wouldn't matter to them about the gender of their boss, and about as many now say that a male boss would be preferred as a female boss, and that's the first time that those have been equal.
Do respondents distinguish between immediate boss and, say, CEO?
That's a good question, but the way we phrase it is what I mentioned a moment ago. You had your choice of a boss. We don't say big boss, you know, way up there in the C-suite, so to speak, or your immediate supervisor. So we don't distinguish between those two.
Frank, more Trump Twitter tirades this week targeting what he terms the fake news media. Does the public buy into the delegitimization of outlets, including CNN, The New York Times, Washington Post?
Well, we don't ask about those media outlets very specifically. We just ask about the mass media in general. And we have a couple of different ways that we have trended this and ask it over time. And yes, there is a pre-existing distrust of the media that was there before Trump came onto the national scene, at least as a presidential candidate. So in that sense, he is playing into a pre-existing attitude. And of course, Republicans are significantly more likely to be distrustful than our Democrats. I say, of course, because that's been quite evident in our data going back for a decade or more. Now, this past year, when we updated one of our measures, Dave, we found Democrats suddenly becoming a little more positive about the media. And I think that's kind of in reaction to Trump. So that means that the overall trust figures are actually slightly higher now than they have been because the Democrats have pulled them up. But overall, it's still well less than half of Americans who say that they have a great deal or fair amount of trust that the media can report the news accurately and fairly.
So have Republicans' pre-existing attitudes around the media and trust been exacerbated in the time of Trump?
They have, but I should say that Republicans' distrust of the media being much higher than Democrats' distrust of the media has been around now for quite a while. And the Fox News phenomenon, of course, which began decades ago, played into this and actually exacerbated it, of course, since Fox News has claimed that they were the only ones that were able to be fair and balanced, implying that other media were not.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. This weekend, 400 broken musical instruments in the Philadelphia Public School District will rattle and squeak through a concert written specifically for them. And then they'll be sent out for repair. WHYY's Peter Crimmins reports that the concert is a grand gesture toward funding music education in Philadelphia schools.
A few weeks ago, a group of about 20 people who I'd never met before came together at Temple University to participate in a musical experiment to play a stockpile of broken instruments languishing in Philadelphia's public school system. This group is led by Jay Crush. And because he teaches tuba at Temple University, he selected a tuba out of the broken pile. It's beautifully engraved horn from the 1920s, blackened with tarnish.
Yeah, it's actually not in as bad shape as a lot of them. It looks like it was dredged up from some Roman shipwreck, but it actually plays pretty nicely. You can't tune it. That's the main thing wrong with it. You can hear the valves are a little... It sounds kind of like a machine gun.
Other instruments are in much worse shape. Cellos that have no necks, violins that are a jumble of loose parts in a bag. Raphael Schneider selected a trumpet missing a valve. There's a champagne cork plugged into the middle brass tube where the valve should have been.
I was a student in the Philly schools, and I started on trumpet when I was 8. I started on a district trumpet, so it's nice to see one again.
This group is a small fraction of the 400 volunteers who will perform Symphony for a Broken Orchestra this weekend. Most of them are products of public schools, with fond memories of instruments their teachers issued to them. All of them volunteered to participate in a program that will ultimately repair these instruments and, as another leader, Evan Kassoff, promised, will make a really big noise.
I don't know how many people have gotten to like perform with like 400 other people. It's such a cool experience. Like, just the massive noise is so awesome. Even though it's not like Mahler 2 and it's not some great, you know, beautiful choir at the end where we're all redeemed, the instruments are redeemed.
All of the different sections of the Symphony for a Broken Orchestra came together at the 23rd Street Armory for the first full rehearsal. The piece, written by the Pulitzer Prize-winning composer David Lang, begins small, with musicians just tapping their broken instruments, and then it builds.
No one thing that any musician does is particularly interesting or dramatic.
Lang says he wrote the music so that anyone could play it, virtuoso or first-time beginner, and have the same impact.
What makes the music interesting is when you have one ensemble playing one kind of music and then the next ensemble that's next to them is playing something else. So it's sort of the friction between different groups playing. One of the weird things about rehearsing the piece is I think, you know, it's impossible for anyone to know what this piece sounds like until they all get together.
When Lang was first approached with this idea to write a symphony for instruments that don't work, he immediately leapt at it. He himself was a product of a public school education in Los Angeles where a teacher put a trombone in his hands in elementary school. It changed his life. The symphony is, on one hand, a love letter to misfits that need to be understood by the unique sounds they produce.
But to me, the moving part of it is that these instruments weren't supposed to be unique. These instruments were built to be dependable, to be normal, to be ordinary. They were built to be part of a child's daily musical life.
The concert this weekend is not the culmination of the project, but its beginning. David Lang's Big Sound is designed to inspire people to donate money into a dedicated fund that will repair instruments in the Philadelphia School District in perpetuity. The guy who hatched this whole idea, the concert and the repair fund, is Robert Blackson of Temple's Contemporary Art Gallery. He says this concert is more of a community experiment than a musical one.
It's that necessity to care about something, that sense of if we can recognize ourselves in the care of something, in this case the care of instruments and music education, then we start to see the shift that can happen across the society of our relationship to caring and the world around us.
Symphony for a Broken Orchestra will be performed twice on Sunday at the 23rd Street Armory. It's free, but tickets are required. Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader, with help from our intern, Isabel Cristo. At the helm this week, Al Banks, Charlie Kyer, and Adam Stanishevsky. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. John Musoni is Assistant Vice President for News Operations. Our News Director is Eugene Son. Assistant News Director, Katie Colinari. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.